From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. A newly formed committee charged with planning for Alaska's once-a-decade redistricting process will hold its first meeting next week. Redistricting is the task of redrawing Alaska's legislative districts to align with new numbers from the federal census, which also comes once a decade. The process is often politically fraught, with lawsuits filed that challenge the new districts. Final decisions about where district lines are drawn will be made by a separate redistricting board that's authorized by the Alaska Constitution. But two decades ago, the Alaska legislature also created what it calls the Redistricting Planning Committee, which is asked to make initial preparations for the board's work. Its powers include leasing office space for the board, compiling maps and databases, and acquiring redistricting computer software. The committee is holding its first meeting next week in Anchorage. The constitutionally authorized redistricting board has not yet been appointed. Its makeup is the same as the planning committee. There are two appointees by the governor and one each from the House Speaker, Senate President, and Chief Justice. There's also a requirement that members represent different geographic areas of the state. The board members must be appointed by September 1st next year. The Coast Guard spent most of the day today, the daylight hours at least, in Juneau looking for a possible missing person. Petty Officer 3rd Class Amanda Norcross is a spokesperson for Coast Guard District 17 in Juneau. She says the search was prompted by a referral from local 911 dispatchers about a pleasure craft adrift in Gatineau Channel with no one on board and its engine running, but not in gear. No one had been reported missing, but just in case, the Coast Guard initiated a search, which included a Jayhawk helicopter flying up and down the channel. By sunset, the Coast Guard reached the boat's owner and someone they'd entrusted to move it, safe and sound.
In addition to the fact that there's been no sightings or other reports of people in the water, the search was suspended.
Norcross says the Coast Guard wasn't able to come up with an explanation for how or why the motor was running. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute opened its visitor center in downtown Juneau about 4 years ago. Since then, the number of cruise ship tourists who visit Juneau has steadily increased. The city is expecting more than 1.4 million cruise ship passengers next year. With more and more tourists coming, the Institute decided to hire cultural interpreters to help guide visitors through Southeast Alaska Native culture. KTOO's Ryan Cunningham tells us how they explain their history, their culture, their art, their existence to someone who just got off a cruise ship.
As a cultural interpreter for Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, John Lawrence tries to answer any questions people might have. Questions like, what's that thing on the wall? Or what kind of paint did they use on that thing?
Number one is about the paint. You know, how did they get the paint back in the olden days?
John spends most of his day welcoming people into the visitor center and just striking up conversations as folks check out all the exhibits. He starts chatting up a couple of visitors looking at this coffee table size interactive touchscreen.
Where are you folks from?
New York.
Oh, you're not going to like my Boston Red Sox World Series ring.
The New Yorkers are Arlene and Stuart Colbert. They both seem genuinely interested in learning more about Alaska Native history and culture. Arlene tells John that not many others on their cruise ship share their interest, which bummed them out a little.
Is this your first trip to Alaska?
Yes. First trip on a cruise.
On a cruise?
Yeah.
All right. What do you think so far?
So far, so good.
What do you think of the weather?
Oh, my God. We brought
the weather to you.
But we didn't see any animals.
Not yet?
No, we're really.
John is good at this, right? Like, he's a good listener, he has a good sense of humor, and in a manner of speaking, he speaks the visitor's language. And he says it's one of his favorite jobs he's ever had. In fact, he really only has one complaint about his summer gig.
Standing on my feet all day, my feet are barking right now. That's the only part I don't like.
This past summer was just John's second year on the job, but the cultural tourism industry has been around for a while now. Alexis Bunton worked briefly for Sea Alaska Heritage Institute as an administrative assistant, and then for Tribal Tours of Sitka as a cultural tour guide. Now she's a cultural anthropologist.
You know, we're selling ourselves to people, and we're trying to be really nice because we want to make as many tips as possible.
She also wrote a book called So How Long Have You Been Native? Life as an Alaska Native Tour Guide. That was an actual question Bunton got from a tourist once. Bunton is Aleut Inupiaq, and she's been Alaska Native her whole life.
You have to act like the visitor is like an old friend or family and like you're hosting them, but at the same point in time, it's a material transaction with money. So everybody's agreeing to play this fake game of what our relationship is to each other.
Sea Alaska Heritage Institute opened its new cultural facility in downtown Juneau about 4 years ago. Rosita Worrell is the Institute's president. She says more and more curious visitors were wandering in. That meant they needed more people on hand to help explain things.
People like John Lawrence, who are knowledgeable about our culture, greeting people at the door, introducing them to our clan house, the exhibits.
But how do these interpreters deal with an outsider's ignorance, especially when they have questions about things bigger than paint?
I remember somebody asking me once, you know, how come you don't get angry? And how come you don't get angry at the insensitive ways that you're treated? And we do get angry, but we can't let it, you know, we can't let it overcome us. And so we've had, you know, had to learn how to deal with it.
To some degree, that's a struggle any Alaska Native and Juneau faces when tourists come to town. They're introducing a whole new history and culture and heritage to someone who's just fresh off the boat and is hanging around Juneau for a couple of hours. That's what John Lawrence does. He does it like it's his job, because it is his job.
That's an excellent question, my friend.
Okay.
All right.
Reporting from Juneau, I'm Ryan Cunningham.
This story was adapted from an episode of KTOO's podcast, Cruise Town, which is out now. You can listen and subscribe on podcast apps and at ktoo.org/cruisetown. The Anchorage Assembly has approved funds to study how the city would build a waste-to-energy incineration plant to contend with its landfill limits. Anchorage Daily News reported yesterday that the Assembly has approved the use of $100,000 from its solid waste services budget to fund the plan to be completed in 90 days. The nearly $400 million plant would require 7 to 10 years of work before opening. Anchorage Solid Waste Services Manager Mark Spafford says the landfill in Eagle River has an estimated 42 years of operations left, while an incineration plant would increase that lifespan to 177 years. Spafford says other options include sending trash north to the Matanuska-Susitna Valley or removing it by water using a barge, although neither are economically viable. Skagway Brewing Company harnessed the carbon dioxide produced by brewing to fuel their aeroponic garden. As Claire Strempel reports from Alaska's Energy Desk, that's adding a layer of food security to the remote southeast community.
Not many brewing companies employ a full-time gardener, but not many brewing companies have a full indoor aeroponic garden above their brew room. I have to slip soft blue cloth over my shoes before I meet her.
These are just booties to protect so we don't get any pests in there.
Amy Erfling gardens in a 1,200-square-foot room full of organic herbs and lettuce.
Green oak leaf and a red oak leaf and then a rosé oak leaf, and then we have a couple of summer crisps in there, so it's kind of a beautiful array of colors of red and green lettuces.
If you've never seen an aeroponic garden before, picture a warm, humid space full of what look like twin mattresses hanging from the ceiling. But where the mattress would have a cushion, these have plants. It's snowing outside, but it's about 75 degrees in the garden. And that hum you're hearing is a bunch of fans that keep air circulating inside. The fresh air is augmented by carbon dioxide, which is known to boost plant growth. It's also conveniently a natural waste product from the brewing process. So a little pipe in the wall takes that gas from the brew room up to the garden where it speeds photosynthesis. Water laced with a nutrient mixture sprays down plant roots every 8 minutes. The garden produced over 100 pounds of lettuce a week this summer when tourists poured off of cruise ships and into the brewery's restaurant. This winter, they're producing about half that, but it's still about 60 pounds of lettuce, herbs, and kale a week that would otherwise have to be imported.
You know, we really can't grow this in the winter up here, so it's such a short growing season, outdoors, that this is something that you can actually do year-round.
It's enough for the salads on the brewery's menu with a lot of leftovers. They sell those to community members, and any extras are donated to the school cafeteria or the Elks Lodge.
Your food security is only as strong as your weakest link.
Dr. Elizabeth Hodges teaches at University of Alaska Fairbanks and worked for the state's Food Policy Council.
Most of our state does rely on the vast majority of our food to come in from outside or from a community outside of our own community. You are vulnerable to disruptions.
Locally produced food improves food security because there's no supply chain to break down. And she said it's not just nutrients that stay local.
there's countless studies to show that for every dollar that goes into the local food economy, it has an amplifying effect or a ripple effect throughout that local food economy. So then the individual who spends that dollar in the community on that local food, that dollar stays in the community.
That's part of the plan for Skagway Brewing Company. In their first year gardening, they produced 100% of the greens for their restaurant. And that's starting small. The garden can easily double what it produced this summer. So now they're working on a deal to stock their produce in local stores next year. Reporting in Skagway, I'm Claire Strimple.
A 51-year-old Fairbanks man suspected of using a backhoe to steal a truck has been charged with felony vehicle theft and evidence tampering. Raymond Sharp is also charged with misdemeanor criminal trespass and violating conditions of release. He's represented by the Alaska Public Defender Agency. Alaska State Troopers, shortly before noon Wednesday, took report of a person dragging away vehicles with a backhoe north of Fairbanks. Trooper investigators say Sharp used the heavy equipment to tow a truck and attempted to hide the truck in his yard by covering it with other items. Sharp was arrested and remained jailed Friday at Fairbanks Correctional Center. And finally, a bear has been blamed for a pair of vehicle break-ins at a Kodiak Airport parking lot that resulted in $15,000 in damage to one car. Fairbanks Daily News Minor reported Wednesday that the vandalism occurred at the Island Air Terminal parking lot adjacent to the Kodiak Benny Benson State Airport. Vehicle owners Doreen Phillips and Alyssa Brentenson are both residents of Akiak, a village about 90 miles from Kodiak. Brentenson says she parked for 2 days at the airport lot and returned to find a caved-in roof, broken window, ripped seats, and muddy bear prints and fur covering the car. Brentenson says she saw similar damage to Phillips' car 2 days later and was told five other vehicles in the parking lot have experienced similar bear damage. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Friday, November 29th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.